we're ready for our first speaker. So I would like to welcome Glenda to share her experience, strength, and hope, and her plan of action to get through the holiday season. Take it away, Glenda, and I'm going to unmute myself.
Hi, everyone. Welcome. I've been in the program now. It's hard to believe it's been close to 30 years. One of the things I grew up with was a family that, you know, celebrated with food. And it was not the healthiest either. A lot of fried food, a lot of sugar. And my mom would always celebrate with it. And so I learned at a very young age, she became anorexic. So I learned a lot about food problems. And then she became bulimic, and I learned about that as well. Swearing up and down, it would never happen to me. Huh. So, life lessons, things took a turn in my life, and I started using food. And it started around Halloween, and it continued on through the holidays because of all the celebrations and everything. And then I would go on a crash diet and do really well for a couple months and then swirl down again. And what I didn't realize at the time was I was addicted to sugar really bad. And a lot of the foods that I grew up with was processed foods. That was the other thing. So it was interesting because when I first came to OA, I learned a lot about food, different foods there is, and, you know, choices. And I couldn't even believe you could go to a fruit stand or, you know, buy vegetables that's not in a can or frozen. And that's not processed. And so over time, and then when I had children, I wanted to teach them differently. Even though I was teaching them differently during the day, I was compulsively overeating at night. So I would buy them special treats, eat them all night, and then have to go buy them more and hide, you know, the garbage. And so one of the things I learned, I just kept coming back and coming back and coming back, was that sugar was not my friend. Some people are normies. They can have every once in a while. I am not. And so I learned, you know, that I needed to do things differently. So the other thing I learned is coming through, you know, to OA meetings was, gatherings during the holidays doesn't have to be about the food. It's about the connections. And, so I started learning, it's like, okay, Glenda, take a smaller, my sponsor said, why don't you choose a smaller plate? And if it's a potluck, go through one time. Really? So I started doing that. And then I was watching I started being more aware of how more friendly I became. And I was talking to people, go figure, instead of just focused on the food and the sugary snacks and what have you. And so that made a difference. The other thing that became very crystal clear is I worked most of my life full time, that on Fridays I'd start celebrating all the way through the weekend, and I would be buying food, and usually junk food, or in some foods that were healthy for you, but I ate too much of it. So I started learning about trigger foods and stuff. And so what I started doing, and it was with my sponsor, she says, okay, when you're going to the gathering, bring yourself a healthy snack and stick to that. What? I didn't understand that one either. So I started doing that. And then when people, you know, kept pushing the food, because my family, that's what they do. Another OA friend, she says, tell them you're allergic. Because they don't get the whole OA thing at all. I tried that. I tried talking to them about that. And so that really made a difference, because people would go, oh, you're allergic. Okay. So they didn't keep coming up to me and pushing it. So over time, I realized I didn't come home with a sugar crash or carb crash or whatever and feel horrible for days on end afterwards, and became depressed. So now one of the things that I do is I go for the people. Go figure. And if I make things, I give it away. If people give me things, which they still do, I thank them very much, you know, and I go give it to somebody else. And then I'll ask them, do you have any allergies or anything? And they go, no, I eat that. So I'll give them to my neighbors. And so it's not in the house. And it's opened up a whole nother world, because it gives you freedom. And you don't beat yourself up towards the end of the holidays. And then, you know, like for years, I would go on a crash diet. I would fast for a couple of weeks and then get into the groove again and then go down the rabbit hole because another holiday was coming up. So that has made a huge difference. And when I got stuck, I would call people. And there was a few people in OA that I felt connected with, because I don't do well with people doing this. I had parents that did this, the whole shaking of the finger, and it's not healthy for me. It sends me back down the rabbit hole. So how I get through the holidays now is enjoy them. You know, enjoy the folks I'm with, enjoy the activities, and it's not all about the food. Go figure. And it's about finding joy every day. Because I didn't realize for so many years what I was replicating for my daughters, even though I was going to program, I was going to meetings. They told me later when they got older, they heard me in their eating. And they saw the garbage, because I would even hide the garbage. So now they've learned, you know, they're a lot older now. They're in their 30s and 40s to enjoy their life. And they don't need to go down the rabbit hole. And if they do, tomorrow's a new day. And I take it sometimes minute by minute when things happen, because as we all know, unfortunate things do. And sometimes it's during the holidays. Aunt Sarah might get in a fight with Uncle Henry, or, you know, you never know about families. But it's unbelievable how much freer I feel by making those choices and by using the steps. And I write my food down every day. For me, everybody's different. I write them down at the end of the day. I write down also what action I took, what kind of activities I did, exercise of any kind, interactions I had with people. Because 9 times out of 10, when I'm journaling, if my food wasn't as good as it usually is, something happened that day, or I didn't reach out when I felt stuck. And using the tools really makes a world of difference. So keep coming back, everyone.
All right. Well, hey, welcome everybody. Now, for those of you that might have joined late, going to give it just a really quick 30-second overview. We've got 2 speakers left. Each speaker will share for approximately 20 minutes on their experience, strength, and hope. They're also going to share their plan of action and what works for them getting through the holiday season. When that speaker is over, we're going to be open for 10 minutes for group sharing. And then we're going to go on to our 3rd and final speaker. Those of you who are new will notice that we are recording, but we will be stripping away any of the group sharing. That will be gone. And our 3 speakers have agreed to have their experience, strength, and hope go up on our website. And that is what will be going up our website. And one last thing, I'm watching some of the group comments coming in. I would like to encourage you, if wherever you're from, to throw in your name and what part of the universe you're from. I'm originally from Canada, grew up in Winnipeg, moved to Vancouver, and I was in Ontario for 12 years. So I would love to see and hear where you're calling from. And if you wanted to, it's always volunteer. How long you've been in program? That's always so interesting to see as well. And on that happy note, our 2nd speaker will begin, and that is Sivia. And I am gonna mute myself right now. Bye.
Hi all. First of all, I'm just sharing with you guys, this is my before pictures before I started OA. I just want you to know where I was 11 years ago. If you could raise your hands, if this is your 1st, 2nd, or 3rd meeting, I'm really curious to see, if we have any newcomers. So I'll just let you do that as I talk. So these pictures here, the bottom one is me with my 2 boys who are now 20. One is going to be 27, the other one is 21, almost 22. And the driver's license says that my weight was 150, which is, of course, a lie. I'm 5'2", and my weight at that time was probably around 190. So anyway, I just wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, what brought me in real quick to OA in the first place was a very unhappy marriage. And one of my sons, the now 27-year-old, who is a beautiful young man now who is going to be married next September, was in a lot of trouble in high school. And thank God it wasn't drugs or alcohol, but he was just having other issues behaviorally and failing school and yada, yada. And I, at the time, was seeing a therapist because I was having behavioral issues too. And so she said to me, when I told her we now had to have him see a psychiatrist and a psychologist, what were the things that, you know, since I can no longer afford her, she asked me, what would make you the most happy? And I said, well, if I could only lose 50 pounds, that would be great. That would make everything happy. And she said, well, have you ever heard of OA? And so I went to an OA meeting and went to about 5 or 6 of them, and found a sponsor in the program that's called OA 90, and did really well. I lost 70 pounds in about 9 months, and I've kept it off ever since. But that doesn't mean my food was abstinent, nor was my emotional sobriety intact until a couple or 3 years ago, and I still have issues with, you know, losing that. So now that you have a little bit of my background, just a couple of things. The holidays, starting tonight, when we buy all the candy for our kids and the trick-or-treaters, and guess what, guys? You're not going to have a lot of trick-or-treaters this year, so who's going to eat the candy? Sugar addicts, of course. Now, I haven't touched sugar or flour in 11 years. And so I can be around candy. I can be around cookies and bake, all those delicious things. It doesn't bother me. I don't have to eat it. But that's 11 years of not being addicted. However, I know that if I pick it up, it's going to be insane. So for me, you know, the holidays, we're going to be coming up to Thanksgiving, then there's Hanukkah, then there's Christmas, then there's New Year's, all sorts of food and drink. And what is my plan for staying abstinent through the holidays? For the past 11 years, this will be my 12th year of being abstinent. At least that's my plan. And we all know that people plan and God laughs. So whatever. It's all about, when we have a slip, it's all about taking our will back. And I have to be willing to not take my will back. And that means I have to remain spiritually fit. When we lose our spiritual connection with our higher power, that's when, according to the big book, things can go really haywire. And of course, the holidays are a time for loving family and getting together and delicious food, right? Hell no. How many of us here dread seeing our families? Just do a quick hand raise. I'm just curious, right? We have issues. Everybody has issues. Everybody in the universe could use some sort of anonymous program. It just is what it is. And so I decided to spend a little time talking about anger. And on page 66 in the big book, it is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the alcoholic or food addict, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. Whatever your perception of a higher power is, okay, here it's called the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of food returns again, we eat again. And with us, to eat is to die. How many people here know people that have died of this overeating disease that we have? Absolutely. Me too. I don't want to be one of them. Diabetes runs so rampantly in my family that my father and all of his siblings had it. My grandmother died a bilateral above the knee blind amputee. Every single one of my siblings except for me has diabetes. And I think it's just because I'm the youngest. and it hasn't yet happened, and I'm trying to forestall it as long as possible. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men and women, by the way. But for alcoholics, these things are poison. We turn back to the list, and this is referring to our fourth step list. And for those of you who have not yet done a fourth step, get to it. There's no reason why we should take 18 months to get through the steps. I firmly believe that the faster we get through the steps, we can start our recovery journey. The faster, and then if we've left something out, hey, guess what? You can always do it again. And I live each day in steps 10, 11, and 12. If I get angry that my brother said something stupid on the Zoom Thanksgiving call, I can quickly do a 10th step and call one of the members of my God Squad. And my God Squad is a group of men and women that I have in my phone to make sure that when I'm feeling resentful or angry, that I call and give them my 10th step. And all a 10th step is a fourth step on that particular issue. I am feeling resentful today because Harlan said something, yes, I have a brother named Harlan, said something stupid and it affected my self-esteem. It affected my relationships. It affected whatever. And what was my part? Well, and I have to think about, what did I do? Well, I have to realize that Harlan is a sick man and I need to treat him with the same tolerance, patience, and love that I would any sick friend. If you had a person, friend, who had cancer and was dying of cancer, you would not get pissed at that person. You would be extra tolerant of the fact that they yell at you because they're not feeling well. I know this because my husband has recovered from cancer. And there were times where I had a call, I had to phone in a call because of the way he treated me. But it was because he didn't feel good. Well, Harlan is sick. He psychically doesn't feel well. So rather than get all up into his face about it, I go remove myself from the situation, make a phone call, and do a 10th step. Every night before I go to bed and in the morning when I wake up, the big book tells us that we need to take a look at our day. And I do that. This is how I get through the food and not mow through the food, but eat my three meals that are weighed and measured a day with no snacking in between, with no flour or sugar. That's what I've been doing for 11 years. Have not always been abstinent in that situation, but I have learned, as one of my sponsees likes to say, I need to pause. I need to pray. And then I need to proceed. So pause, pray, and proceed. Have a God Squad. Take a walk. Go hide in the bathroom if you need to make a call. Now, we're lucky because all we need to do this year, because most of us, I don't think, most of us are not having live Thanksgiving dinners. Or if we are, it's not, you know, 35 people crammed into a living room, or at least I hope you're not. But if you are, go take a walk. If you're not, all you need to do is mute your microphone, mute your video, and go walk and make a phone call to your God Squad member. There's another book that I, in fact, was reading this book with another sponsee this morning, and it was like, hey, wow, this is exactly what I was going to be talking about. It says one of the biggest risks to a person in recovery is self-righteous anger. You know, that's, oh, well, he said that to me, or 25 years ago, he borrowed $10,000 from me and never paid me back. So I have every right to be angry at this person. We become very dangerous to ourselves and others when we are right. Being right used to mean a free check to treat a person who is wrong any way we choose, especially if we love the person. It meant we could really cause havoc in the name of being right. Most of us never learned that right doesn't mean exclusive. There are many ways of being right. We just assumed that there was one way. We were taught that by our parents, our places of worship, and our schools. As we move into our birthright as spiritual beings, we discover that right is actually a cage, not a freedom. Being right is a perspective, not a license for angry behavior. How many of us here don't speak to certain family members because of political disagreements? You know what I'm saying? Each of us has a unique perspective, thank God, and therefore a unique way of being right. We must learn to temper our anger based on self-righteousness and learn to open our minds and hearts to different points of view. It doesn't mean we won't get angry. It just means we won't hurt others so often with our rightness. In looking at anger as a character defect, it is important to realize that anger is a legitimate emotion. To deny all anger in the name of spiritual growth is as unhealthy as being angry all the time in the name of being right. We get angry. We need to learn how to express this anger in a healthy, non-damaging manner. It is the inappropriate expression of anger and the out of proportion expression of anger that is a defect and causes others harm. If you're feeling angry and you've been holding on to it for 15 years or even a year, go do an 11th step, a 10th step, excuse me, to find out what your part is. What do you get out of holding on to that anger? Because if you don't figure it out, when that pumpkin pie is served on Thanksgiving, you might just dive right into it and eat it. And with that, I pass and thank you so much for being here and have a really wonderful abstinent holiday season.
Sivia, thank you very much. And Glenda, speakers, and then each speaker shared for 20 minutes, and then we have 10 minutes for group sharing. And I just want to say I am thoroughly enjoying today's speaker presentation. It's just wonderful. It's getting me just totally recharged for the upcoming holiday season. So we're now down to our third and final speaker. And I am going to turn it over to Tanya right now and mute myself. Welcome, Tanya.
My name is Tanya P. I'm recovered in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. And I am very grateful to be here this morning. Michigan looks like this. We're the state that uses our hand, but I live up on this hand right here, right near Lake Superior. So now you've had your geography lesson for the day. Going third is pretty hard because you all have said everything that I was gonna say. So this is your review, and there will be a quiz immediately following my talk. Because you've all said everything I'm going to say, I'm going to start with a prayer. God, please help me set aside everything I think I know about myself, the 12 steps, this meeting, and you, God. May I see and speak your truth. Amen. So I'm going to share my, I hope I can do this quickly. I'm going to share my before picture. Watch, I won't be able to share quickly because that is not the way it ever works. You get it ready and then all right. There I am. This is me at about 307 pounds. I don't really know how much I weighed. My top weight was 307 from the doctor's office. I sprang up from two blue-collar workers in Michigan's Lower Peninsula. And I was, as you were, cute as a button. I'm going to show you now me cute as a button, hopefully. Because we all did start out enjoying our food. We all started out, you know, I guess it's not going to come up. But it is me when I was about 2 and a half eating a piece of pizza, you know, happy as a clam. And we all started out that way. We all started out being able to go trick-or-treating and enjoy what we came home with. But then we grew up, and if you went out and you bought the bag of candy for the trick-or-treaters, and yes, it was.
Tanya, I think you muted yourself.
Oh, it kicked off. My internet may be, we are having a very windy day. Can you hear me now?
Yes, you sound fine.
Okay. Sorry about that. I was talking about how cute we were when we were children. I don't know if you heard any of that, but I was going to share a picture of myself, cute as a button, when I was little. Because we all looked like that. We all went out trick-or-treating in our cute costumes. We all got candy, and we all safely ate some of it until a certain age, and mine was probably 7. I went to my first diet and calories club when I was 13 and 14. The first week I lost 9 pounds, and everybody clapped. Oh, this is so wonderful. I did some exercise bulimia throughout high school. Then I got married, and poof, you know, once you're married, you don't have to impress anyone. And that's when the real compulsion to eat started. You know, the very first meeting I attended in 1991, I heard our invitation to you. And the first words are, we of Overeaters Anonymous have made a discovery. At the very first meeting we attended, we learned that we were in the clutches of a dangerous illness, and that willpower, emotional health, and self-confidence, which some of us had once possessed, were no defense against it. And I was so struck by those words. I'm like, how do they know that? And over the years, I've heard my story over and over and over again, because like I said, you guys already said everything, because we all have. We've all said all of that stuff. So the tools I need to get through the holidays, by the way, I have an additional holiday because my birthday is Christmas Eve. And I am of that faith that goes to church on Christmas Eve. So I have never gone to the bar and celebrated, but I have eaten lots of cake. So it's good that I'm not an alcoholic. I wouldn't have ever been able to indulge in any of that stuff. What I wanted to focus on is this first paragraph and more about alcoholism. Because even though I learned at my first meeting that I was in the clutches of a dangerous illness, I really didn't want to believe it. In fact, it says on page 30, most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will be able to control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. This is the tool I have to take into the holidays, because I get around, my family shows up, and they drink beer, and we bake cakes and cookies and all of the good stuff. There's candy here. Potato chips are here. All sorts of cheeses are here. Everything I love. And I must remember that I have this great obsession to be normal, and that it is an illusion. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing, and many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. So this holiday season, I'm going to put this in my toolkit, that I have an obsession that I am normal, and I am not a normal eater. I am not a normal eater. Later on that page, it says, talks about the progressive illness. We started out as those cute trick-or-treaters, but now we are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grips of a progressive illness, and over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. February of 2019, even though I had years and years of coming in and out of program, I had hit my bottom. I took two grocery bags full of crap out of my car. I had lost some weight, so I wasn't at that 307. I was right around 270. But a person from a meeting I had been listening to on the phone walked into our two-person meeting. I live in a very rural area. It was just two of us, and this woman walked in. And I said, wow, God is speaking to me, and I need to pay attention to this, because I am in the clutches of a dangerous illness, which is progressive and never gets better. I became abstinent at that time. I did have some slips during the past year, during that year. But I had lost 140 pounds. And here's how I did it. I paid attention to the spiritual tools that are encompassed in this program. Are at the top of the, I think that's in the invitation. I'm sort of working through my book here. Sorry, I thought I had this all set out. At the top of page, that bottom of page 58, remember, deal with alcohol or food, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power, and that one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. So I put in my pocket that I am not a normal eater, and that the only way I can receive any kind of help is to use the spiritual tools that are presented in this program. And they're the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. if I do follow these steps, and I have, I get to a place where I have some promises that have come true. I have a new freedom and a new happiness. I do not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. I comprehend the word serenity, and I know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, I love that the Alcoholics Anonymous says how far down the scale, because that's what applies to us. We see how our experience can benefit others. The feeling of uselessness and self-pity has disappeared in my life. I will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Is this perfect? No, but these promises have, by and large, come true for me. So the crux of the matter is on page 85. We are not fighting nor avoiding temptation during the holiday season. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react, as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for food is a subtle foe. So the point of this talk is that in order to stay on track, in order to maintain my abstinence, I have to use spiritual tools. I have to enlarge my spiritual life. And I do that through prayer And as my sponsor encourages me to do meditation, which is harder for me, and using steps 10, 11, and 12. So spiritual tools might include prayer, keeping right in the moment, stopping any kind of mind chatter. I don't know about you, but I make stuff up in my head. And it's important that I be able to say, hey, I'm making this up. This is not true. And I sometimes have to stop a story several times. I do write down every day, pause, pray, and proceed. I write down every day, bless them, change me. I write down every day, love and tolerance is my code. Love and tolerance of others is my code. Other spiritual tools are things like, weirdly, that's not my food. God didn't give that food to me. And I try to focus on doing the next right thing. My spiritual goal every day is to ask myself, how can I best serve my higher power? My higher power's will be done. I heard today in a meeting, God gave us brains to use. Yes, he did. I wanted to get to, so most of what I've said is for people who are living in steps 10, 11, and 12, I think, but what if you aren't recovered? What if you are on step 3? Well, there are lots of things you can do to build your spiritual toolkit. And those are acts of service. Acts of service are things like be a sponsee, get yourself a sponsor. Because when you're a sponsee, your sponsor, as I learn more from my sponsees than I learn from anything else, I think. Share at a meeting. Offer to moderate a meeting. Make outreach calls. Call a newcomer. Read literature of our program with other people and share your story. If you have an opportunity, store, do it. You know, I recently was talking to a woman. We were getting our mammograms, and she said something about, you know, Halloween's coming, and I'm like, yeah, you know, I don't have to struggle with that anymore. Well, how have you done that? And that's the open door. You just like, meek, step inside. So God gave us brains to use. He gave us each individual gifts. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show. And we humbly ask our higher powers many times per day, God, help me to do your will, not my will. I have felt like I have rambled, but that's what I have today. And so I'm going to pass. Thanks for inviting me to be part of this workshop.
And thank you, Tanya. Thank you very much. And I can see you've got snow where you are, because it looks like the snow is right up to the top of the windows. And so I have empathy for you.